I'm supposed to speak about the European Union, about the European crisis, about the ways out of the crisis, about how we see from our part of the world. I come from Slovakia, which is a country slightly younger than you, I think. We are celebrating 20 years of our independent existence this year, which gives us very young but mature, as they say. And this is a good opportunity to look back. And I must say that these 20 years of my country have been seen as a success story. We will see that a lot, and I will tell you more in details about it. I have had the privilege to be the part of the success on the very first day, building the independent state and helping the state to become part of the European Union, NATO, and part of the solution, not part of the problem of today's challenges the European Union is facing. I don't know how familiar you are with my country, probably not too much, so I'll walk you through the modern history very briefly so you understand the background. So the modern history of my country started 1989, which is the year known as the fall of the Berlin Wall. For us it's the year known as the Velvet Revolution, end of the communist regime in what used to be Czechoslovakia. After that we started a fundamental new processes of building a democratic system, creating a market economy. At the same time, since Czechoslovakia was a federal state consisting of two republics, the Czech Republic and Slovak Republic, and we had traditionally for years three parliaments and three governments, this process was accompanied by a discussion about what kind of federation are we going to have. To put it very simply, the Czechs would have preferred federation which looked more like a unitary state, while the Slovaks would be in favor of federation which was closer to confederation. We spent 2 years discussing how to build our common standard, and we came to a point when we said, look, stop wasting time discussing this, because we have big challenges ahead of us. That means building a democratic society, joining EU and NATO. Let's not waste energy on these state issues anymore. Let's split up peacefully, let's be friends, and let's go independent, even though in the same direction. Unique case of Czechoslovakia in comparison to former Soviet Union or former Yugoslavia was that we did it peacefully and we agreed on the rules and on everything in advance. So we sat down with our friends Czechs and we agreed on dividing the assets and liabilities of former Czechoslovakia. So by the day of the split, which was the 1st of January 1993, everything was clear. We knew who owns what, where we are, even who is going to run for the international offices, and so on and so forth. I used to be a diplomat in the Czechoslovak Foreign Service, so the unique situation was that we received a questionnaire that was asking all of us which country do we want to represent from the 1st of January. So it was a free choice whether I want to be Slovak or a Czech after the 1st of January. Since I am a Slovak, there was no dilemma, but for a couple of colleagues of mine who were Slovaks too, but spent many years in Prague, losing their roots in Slovakia, having no background anymore, their children speaking Czech and so on. They said, I'm a Slovak, but I will continue working for the Czech Republic. So we started independently. Most of our population was against it. There was no referendum. If there was a referendum, it would be unsuccessful at that time. So the act that decided about the split of Czechoslovakia was a constitutional law adopted by the federal parliament at that time. After the split, the Czechs had the feeling of losing something, like part of their body was amputated, while the Slovaks had the motivation to create something new, state institutions, and to prove that we are able to run our independent state, because there were doubts. First year were quite bumpy, particularly 1994-1998 period was seen as difficult because we had a government which was not very much appreciated in democratic Europe. And from my personal perspective, the year 1997 was the worst out of these 20 years, because that was the year when our neighbors, our closest neighbors, Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary, were invited to join NATO, and we were not mentioned. And they were also invited to start the accession negotiations to join the European Union. Again, we were not mentioned. But it had a mobilizing effect upon us, because our people realized that we don't want to belong to the second category of Europeans, and we believe that the problem is not with the Slovaks, the problem is with the government. And as a result, in 1998, we changed the government and we started running on double speed to catch up with our neighbors, and we managed. So we joined the NATO 2004, 2 years later, but we joined the European Union together with them, again, 2004. And we didn't stop there. We wanted to make sure that we will never, ever be called a black hole on the map of Europe, as we were called by Madeleine Albright back in that year, 1997. So we continued with our integration even after joining the European Union, 2007 we joined Schengen, and 2009 as a first post-communist country, we joined the Eurozone, and since then we are using Euro as our national currency. 2009, which was the culmination of our integration effort, coincided with the breakout of financial crisis and economic crisis, as you know very well. So the moment we joined Europe was suffering a big problem, not because of us joining, but because of a number of problems that preceded the moment. So rather than enjoying the membership in the Eurozone, we were invited to be part of the rescue effort. Now, what are the reasons why Europe found itself in crisis? I would say two sets of reasons. The first one, systemic or structural. Namely, we were poorly equipped for the challenges. We did not have necessary instruments. One example, you have 17 member states which are using euro as a currency. That means 17 countries with one monetary policy, but with 17 different fiscal policies. There was no coordination, no instrument, nothing. As a result, we were where we are. No banking supervision at European level, no institution to deal with the signals that some banks are engaged in an improper business or a very reckless operations, which are putting their whole business operations at risk. And second reason, as I see, complacency, irresponsibility. Because we did not respect even those instruments that were available. We had so-called stability and growth pact. And that document, which, among other things, forbid the debt to exceed 3% of GDP, was violated more than 60 times. And there were no consequences, nothing. So that means we were not respecting our own rules. So these sets of shortcomings and irregularities contributed to the crisis and the problems we are facing. Now, Europe started responding to the crisis. As you know, European Union is a great and big thing. It's not always the fastest. So it took us almost 2 years to come to understanding what needs to be done. And since then, I would say we are on a good track. We had to do two things at the same time. First, to extinguish the fire because our house was in flames, and at the same time to deal with the systemic problems to make sure that we will not find ourselves in the same situation. We are in that stage now. We've stopped dealing with the operational challenges, and we were able to switch to a systemic strategic decision. So we adopted a number of measures which are in place now. I'll mention one or two. One, and this is unprecedented, and this is happening right now, these days. All the governments of the Eurozone had to submit their national budgets for the next year for the scrutiny by the European Commission. We've done it last week, so now is the time for the scrutiny, and we will get the assessment of the European Commission by mid-November. This is unprecedented, it has never been the case. Second good thing is that we are in the process of building European or Eurozone-wide supervision institutions for the banking sector, so that we have early warning mechanisms and we also have instruments to act when we see that something is wrong, something is cooking somewhere in the Eurozone. Another good thing is that we are speaking about future Europe, which will be different. Europe today is different from Europe used to be 5 years ago, and it's very different from Europe we are going to have 5 years from now. We are speaking about banking union, we are speaking about fiscal union, we are speaking about economic union, we are speaking about political union, even, or at least the democratic legitimacy. So if any of these unions were mentioned three years ago, it would be seen as science fiction. Now it's real. We understand that European integration has to go further and deeper. At the same time, of course, there are questions about how far, how deep, and whether everything that is being regulated at the European level right now has to stay there. And you probably are aware that this discussion is particularly vibrant in the UK, who is thinking about bringing some competencies back to the national level. Equally, there is a very vivid discussion about these issues in the Netherlands, which is now already being discussed in the parliament. But of course, everybody else, including us, is following the discussion, because we say we are not afraid of deeper European integration, but let's make sure that we are transferring to the European level what is better administered from that level. But if there are issues that we believe that national competencies are sufficient, why don't we give these competencies back? Because one of the problems the European Union is facing is over-regulation. Micromanagement of issues and affairs that really don't need to be micromanaged. And this is one of the things the European Union is criticized for, and rightly, would I say. And another thing, another problem the EU is facing and is being criticized for is the detachment of the European institutions from real life and from real people. Ordinary people have problems to understand. I mean, not only ordinary people, we have problems to understand. We are sitting in the meetings and then we read a final document that is adopted, and I said, it's absolutely no way to understand what was agreed. I mean, I know because it was said to me before in plain words, but can't we express our views in a normal language so that people understand? So this is one of the challenges. Democratic legitimacy, national ownership of European laws. Plus, if we transfer some competencies to the European level, then we also have to have the responsibility of those institutions. It's not only about transferring competencies, but having a responsibility. But there must be a mechanism for holding those who are decision makers responsible for what they do. But anyway, hard facts show and prove that Europe is on its way out of the crisis. If you remember, last year, let alone 2 years ago, everybody was speculating about the end of Eurozone, end of or this or that country having to leave Eurozone. Nothing of this is mentioned anymore nowadays. We have figures that show that the current account deficit in the Eurozone, that was 6.7% in 2009, will be less than 3% this year. The government bonds, which are issued by the governments of Portugal or Spain, are now placed on the international market with an interest rate which is half of what it was 3 years ago. And after 18 months of crisis, Eurozone is finally in positive figures. So these are all good figures, and we finally can focus on the strategic issues on making Europe what we want to have out of. The challenges are here, and there are several of them. One of them is how to square the circle between the need for consolidation of public finances, because we need to have public finances in control, but supporting economic growth. For this, you need investments, you need money. But at the same time, you have to keep the money in control. So how to make sure that one does not prevail over the other? How to pump money into the economy without destroying your public finances? Second important challenge European Union is facing is how to sustain our social model and to stay competitive at the same time. European Union represents 7% of the world's population, creates 25% of the world's GDP, and spends 50% of the world's social spending. Is this sustainable in the longer term? Can we stay competitive? if our businesses have to respect the highest structures when it comes to the environment, health protection, and so on and so forth, and all this is reflected in the price of our products, can they be competitive with the products which are coming from China or from Ukraine, that none of these standards have to be observed? If not, are we ready to limit our social welfare state? So this is a challenge that is here, and we will have to face it. Unemployment in general, and young unemployment in particular, is a big problem. I understand that here in Italy, it's up to 40% of young people without job. In my country, it's 35, so it's the same. How to make sure that we are producing graduates from high schools, universities, who are wanted and needed by the labor market. The generation of people without jobs is becoming dangerously big. So these are things that we need to do. And the good thing is that at least we are aware of this and we are discussing how to sell it to the public, particularly in some states which are being spoiled by this system up until now. It's a different story. But we must not forget that the European Union is still the largest economy in the world, is the largest internal market in the world, is the largest donor in the world, and is a unique model of coexistence, of peaceful coexistence of countries, the best functioning and the most efficient model on this planet. So we have not lost any of these qualities. We have lost trust of financial markets, we have lost trust of our own public, our people. We have to regain both. We have to prove, we have to be aware of our strength, and we have to start acting as a global player. Sometimes, and that's my feeling as a diplomat, we are obsessed with our internal problems. We talk about our internal problems, which is limiting our role as a global player. But we are a global player by all the real indicators. We must not abandon our global role. We must not forget that we are among the world leaders, that European Union is leading by example, that our soft power, our attractiveness of our real model is a very powerful weapon we have. And particularly when it comes to the regions which are adjacent to us, such as the Western Balkans or the Eastern Europe, countries of so-called Eastern Partnership Group. They want to be like us. They want to join us. Countries of the Western Balkans do have a perspective, do have a promise to become members of the European Union. And since 2009, they are complaining or they are asking, has anything changed? Somehow Europe doesn't seem to be interested in our future membership anymore. Europe seems to be preoccupied with its own internal problems. So I really believe we shall send strong and clear signals that we have not resigned over our global role. And then there are countries which are lying between, which are positioned between the European Union and Russia, and there is no such thing as vacuum. So they will either be part of our, let's say, economic space, but also cultural space, would I say, and the space of values, even without the perspective of membership, or they will sign up to the project which is known as the Eurasian Union, which is the flagship project for President Putin. And you see how heavy is the pressure they are under from Moscow. And their arms are being twisted to sign up for the other project. So here, the role of European Union is indispensable, and it's really important that we are aware of all these trends which are going on. Let me go back to my own country. I'm happy to say that in all these disputes, we are part of the solution, not part of the problem. We keep our public finances under control. We have one of the best figures in the European Union in the last 10 years. Slovakia enjoyed the highest growth among the members of the European Union, which gives us the opportunity to and the possibility to speak out and to present our voice clearly and our views. We speak about two pillars on which the European Union should be built, namely solidarity, which has always been one of the key principles of the European Union, but responsibility at the same time. Don't ask for solidarity if you are not being responsible with yourself, with your partner. If you are doing your homework, you can demand for the others to do if they are doing their best, but they need our assistance, let's provide assistance. That's what the European idea is about. And of course, my country, not the only one, but together with the other countries who joined the European Union in that last big wave, we understand the importance of the positive motivation, of the tangible perspective, and that's why we are strong advocates for the continuation of the European Union's enlargement policy, because without this tangible perspective, Europe will not be united and the countries of the Western Balkans will not complete their transition. They want to be like us, they want to be one of the same group, but they have to have this chance. So this is how I see the situation from my perspective. But as I say, I'm a professional diplomat and I'm talking to diplomats all the time and to the politicians, and that's why I appreciate the opportunity to hear from you, how you see these things in these views. Feel free to disagree. Feel free to ask about any of these particular moments. You know that in my professional life, I spend lots of time in the Balkans, in different countries there, and of course dealing with countries to the east of the European Union as well. So we can talk about any of these things. Whatever. This is my first opportunity to speak at a university in Italy. As a foreign minister, I get to travel a lot, and whenever I have a chance and opportunity, I do go to universities, I do meet with students, I do want to hear what they think about the issues I'm dealing with and I'm being paid for to do so. So that's why I want to see this as a dialogue, and I'm really interested in hearing your views. So I'll stop here. Thank you for your attention, and please go ahead with your questions.